Today's program was brought to you by Catskill Provisions. Located in a small corner of Northwest Catskill Mountains, they specialize in creating raw, all-natural, handmade food products. For more information, visit catskillprovisions.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening, Fermentable Planet Earth. Welcome to Ferment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
We're your co-hosts for this fermentation experience. So we're a show that's all about home fermentation with a special emphasis on home brewing. We're very excited tonight. We're going to do part two of our off-flavor show. And then we're going to meld that into
what to do when things go wrong, how to make things go great when things go wrong.
And also, we're gonna that'll lead the way into vinegar, which is considered an off flavor in beer, but is a wonderful another fermented product. So we have two very special guests in the studio with us. B.R. Rolia has returned.
Thank you for having me back.
Thanks for coming back. And then we have our special friend John Nagley.
Hello.
I'm so excited to have you guys all here. Yeah. You guys are some of my oldest beer friends here in New York, and very, very excited. And speaking of oldest beer friends in New York, it is the New York City Homebrewers Guild 25th year around right now. And John, you're one of the senior members of the guild.
Yeah.
How's it changed?
Wow. I, you know, it's funny. In the middle, sometime about 7 or 8 years ago, it was falling apart and dying. And the resurgence in interest in homebrewing has just made it vibrant like it's never been in its 25 years.
It's pretty awesome. I mean, I started at the Guild 10 years ago, or just 12 years ago now, I guess. 2001 was when I first met you at the Guild. And yeah, it was like I walked in the room and there was 20 people maximum. I mean, I think there was like 15 or something. And there was nowhere in New York City to get homebrew supplies. But now we have four different homebrew stores, you know, Brooklyn Homebrew Bitter and Esther's, Brooklyn Kitchen, and Whole Foods now is selling
Bowery.
Whole Foods Bowery. And Brooklyn Brew Shop, also for urban brewers, doing small kits. And it's really, really, really awesome. It has created a lot of people. So much that it has me really going crazy this week, overwhelmed with the amount of entries we have for Homebrew Alley 7. I've been mentioning this for the past few weeks, and it's fine. Registration is closed, but we are having a giant party and award ceremony at Alewife Queens on February 9th. Please come by and
Saturday
support
night.
Your local homebrew people. Yep.
Yeah,
I just got to brag because the homebrew contest, our local homebrew contest, is bigger than the regional contest we're going to be doing later this year.
That's right. Yeah. So speaking of that, the regional contest that he's speaking of is put on by the American Homebrewers Association. And if you're not a member, we strongly encourage people to do that. And there are many reasons to do so. You get a lot of discounts in your hometown, such as like a free beer at Brooklyn Brewery every time you go if you flash your membership card.
Yep.
Tends to pay off. But also they hold a homebrew conference as well as a competition, and the competition they accept 750 entries regionally
for each region.
And if you do well in that, then you go on to the national homebrew competition, the bigger one on the national scale. And they have a conference where they have a ton of seminars, and it's wonderfully educational. And actually,
you get
Mary,
to drink a lot of homebrew from around the country.
It's awesome. It's
from 9 a.m. until 2 a.m.
It's fantastic to see so many people of like mind that are really, really enjoying their craft and doing their thing, and all of our friends from around the country doing really, really awesome and creative stuff that you can't buy in stores and you cannot replace. You know what that vibe is. Mm-hmm. And our friend Mary is actually, she is a guest speaker this year on behalf of Ferment About It and herself. Yeah.
Yes.
Just found out yesterday. Very cool.
Yeah, so I'm very excited to be presenting a seminar. So it's going to be called Fermenting on the Flip Side. And it runs right alongside the show, Ferment About It. It's going to be about urban, small-scale brewing, and then also alternative fermentations for not only urban or small-scale brewers, but also anybody that's interested in moving outside of the world of home brewing.
or beer itself, like just other things, such as like rice wine. Speaking of rice wine, we got our first anonymous email, fan mail. We're very excited about it. Yeah. Howard, from Howard, who says that he's got two questions. His father wants to start making some Chinese rice wine, and they've got all the ingredients, glutinous rice and yeast, and he's wondering if we have some hints, tips, or tricks. To be honest, we have not made any of that yet, but it certainly has been bumped up our list absolutely, like, you know, tenfold. Thanks for your email, Howard, and we will get to this and do a show specifically on that soon.
Yeah, because I think, actually, it seems like we've spoken to someone recently whose father or sister or someone makes rice wine. So I'm sure that we will be able to track somebody down in the New York City area. And if not, we'll go outside and have a guest caller. But definitely we're going to have somebody on to talk, do a show on rice wine.
We'll get you the info and tips you need, Howard. Sounds like a lot of fun. And we'll try it ourselves. Absolutely.
Yep.
Is that all the announcements we have?
Dude, Homebrew Alley. Oh, New York City Beer Week.
New York City Beer Week is at the end of February. A lot of really, really fun things are happening, and it's put on by the New York City Brewers Guild. And it'll be from February 22nd to March 3rd, I believe. Yeah, March 3rd. A lot of fun things. The opening party at Galapagos, the Brewer's Choice, and a closing party at Birreria, Italy at Birreria, on that following Sunday when you're finally, you think you couldn't do anymore. And that actually follows the day after Apocalypse Now that's happening at Alewife again. And a bunch of other things all around town. It's in conjunction with the Village Voice, who's doing the publicity on that. And please visit, I think, NewYorkCityBrewersGuild.com. or nycbeerweek.com, and I think there will be more information forthcoming.
Yeah, and they're constantly updating the site, so they'll have a lot more events coming in the next few weeks.
Yep. Oh, and Josh Bernstein, one of our really good friends, is actually having a homebrew event, celebrating homebrew, at Jimmy's Number 43 in the afternoon on March 2nd, which should be very fun and cool.
Yep. It'll be a good chance to try some local homebrews.
And they will all be good homebrews. Things that don't have things like what we're going to talk about today, a couple things. So this is part two of our off-flavor thing. We talked last week about diacetyl, which is a buttery kind of flavor that is appropriate in some beers, but it comes from, you know, can happen in your beer if you don't rack off. If you rack off your beer too soon off the yeast, and don't give it time to absorb. What were the other things we talked about last week? Phenols.
Yep, phenolic, which is like a medicinal. We did specifically a medicinal phenolic flavor because we use the chloroseptic type throat spray to get that effect. So what we started with last week is talking about how you can create these kind of off flavors at home for you and some friends or your homebrew group in order to kind of develop your palates and get more familiarity with off flavors. And the phenol is caused by...
Well, it can happen with a lot of different yeasts. Yeah, like a
number,
you know,
of ways.
it can be caused by, if you don't rinse your, if you do use your sanitized solution according to their instructions, you can get these really weird sort of medicinal phenol flavors. Mm-hmm. If, you know, different yeasts put them off, their different esters where it's appropriate, a lot of places it's not. That's very present.
It could be
in
temperature,
a lot of Belgian beers.
Like maybe the yeast is strained either through temperature or you didn't pitch enough or you... I don't, probably not as much pitch too high, but there's a number of ways that you can get phenolic, which actually brings me, we're going to go off topic slightly, but we, Chris and I were at out last night, and we tasted a couple of homebrews from a new friend of ours, and he was, you know, kind of like, oh, I'm a new brewer, and, you know, I'm not sure what you guys are going to think of our beers, but they were actually very, very good. He had
Travis.
Travis. He had a delicious blonde, and then the next one he said, well, we brewed this as an American amber, I believe.
Yep.
And he said,
a red ale.
That's right, American red ale, and he said, but it doesn't really taste like that, so I'm not sure what you would call it. So, you know, we cracked it open and poured it, and it really tasted to me like a Belgian pale ale. It had a lot of those Belgian yeast characters, like a lot of esters, some phenolics in the background. Mm-hmm. But if he would not have told me what it was, I thought I would have, you know, thought it was this delicious Belgian pale ale. And after talking to him more, what he ascertained probably had gone wrong is that he had a lot of he's actually brewing with a group of friends. And where they're fermenting is a loft in Bushwick, and there's a lot of temperature variations. They don't have any temperature control at all. So he said that's probably what happened is this yeast, because they used an American ale yeast, a very neutral yeast, and it went through some temperature fluctuations, and that would make sense, actually.
He's fermenting in his apartment.
In somebody else's, loft.
And, the loft is that much of a temperature variation?
Have you been to our loft, John?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to tell you. So we live in this crazy loft in Williamsburg. We have a loft heater. That's the only source of heat. So when we wake up in the morning, it's 50 degrees. When you turn the loft heater on, I actually put a thermometer in the corner. It's 101 in that corner.
Ow.
Yes.
But
so,
it immediately dissipates when you turn it off.
Yeah.
We named it the dragon breath, but it's like, you know, for 10 minutes, this thing's going...
Yeah. So I suspect he's in the same situation. And that's very, I mean, those are extreme temperature variations.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, normal temperature variation in an apartment is 5 degrees, and that shouldn't do it. But 50 would,
But anyway, it was interesting. And so this is an example of something where the conditions were not optimal, but it went right. But like he said, you know, we would love to make this beer again, but there's no way we can replicate this. So that's something to be, you know, this is a lucky accident, I would say, but it's, you know, these are always things that you need to think about.
And it goes back to something Vlad said. Vladimir Kowalik was one of our guests last week with BR, and he said, you know, when you take your score sheets from a competition, you know, understand that everybody's, you know, your beer could be in a different area of the flight. Like, it could be first, could be last, and, you know, judgment gets different way. But, and, you know, your beer might not be good for a style, but that overall impression is where people can talk about, you know, how good the beer is, or, like, you know, just basically, you know, as far as drinkability and it being a beer.
Right. So Travis, you know, if he had entered this in a homebrew competition, definitely he would never have entered it in any kind of American ale category. I would have suggested he entered it as a Belgian pale ale, even though it was never designed, wasn't brewed that way. So definitely, and you know, go with that. I mean, if your beer doesn't turn out, that's fine. As long if it's good and you enjoy it, introduce it how you feel that it smells and tastes and comes across as.
There's a checkbox on the left for DMS. What is that, Mary? on score
DMS,
sheets.
DMS, dimethyl sulfate. It's one of we actually did not mix this one up. But do you have my cheat sheet?
I thought I did, but I don't.
So we actually, so the best way to get this is to get just a can of corn. You don't want the cream corn, just like the regular packed in water corn. You strain the corn water off and you add that to your beer. And unfortunately, I don't have the amount in front of me, but again, we're going to post the link. You mix that in with your beer, and that's the best way to get that aroma and flavor of DMS, or dimethyl sulfate. So most commonly, it smells and tastes like the water that you drain from a corn. It can also be vegetable, you know, cabbage, sometimes like shellfish if it's very, very high quantities. And what causes this is there's a little compound called S-methylmethionine that is actually, it's created during the normal malting process. So when barley is turned into malted barley, this compound is created. Now, in pale malts, it remains. So, you know, Pilsner particularly, other kinds of pale two-row, or just pale malt, it still remains. And when you are boiling, anyway, in the brewing process, this S-methylmethionine is converted to dimethyl sulfide, or we'll just refer to it as DMS from now on. And that is what gives you that cooked corn or cooked vegetable flavor and aroma.
How do you prevent that, John?
Okay. I forget.
Okay. You do long boils.
Yes.
And if you boil for a very long
number
time,
one
can let it evaporate off. But actually, this is interesting because John is actually a primarily extract brewer, and it's less...
In the world of beer.
Oh, exclusively. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. So DMS is not the biggest concern.
That's true.
For Matt at all. Make sure it's a vigorous boil too.
Yeah.
If it's less than vigorous, it's just going to stay in there. Or if, you know, if like me, I now brew on an electric stove, and it can be hard to get it to that rolling vigorous boil. And so some brewers will cover their pot partially with a lid to get, you know, to keep the beer, to keep the wort boiling. And that, if you get the condensation, if it falls back into your beer.
Right. Don't let the condensate come back in.
Yeah. And you don't want to, like BR said, not only do you not want to let that condensation, but you don't want to cover your pot entirely. You want to let that boil off. DMS is extremely volatile, so that's the key in getting rid of it. It can also be caused by infections. The other thing is, another reason why you want to chill your beer quickly or your wort quickly before you pitch your yeast is that that DMS can actually reform if you cool too slowly. And then again, you know, you want to make sure if your beer has enough carbonation. The other thing is it's a volatile compound. So if you have a beer that's particularly, you know, that has maybe a little bit of DMS or more than you want, I mean, that's still probably a drinkable beer. You just want to give it a nice swirl in your glass before you drink it.
And we're gonna take a really quick break. Thanks for listening to Fruna Men About It on heritageradionetwork.org. When we come back, we're going to talk about acidity and how to make that awesome.
Catskill Provisions has Valentine's Day literally in the bag with their Seal the Deal gift bag. Start with chocolate honey truffles, and then move on to breakfast in bed with their traceable organic pancake mix and New York State maple syrup. Sure to satisfy any ardent locavore, check out the Catskill Provisions Seal the Deal package at www.catskillprovisions.com.
We all know what a foodie is, but what's foodiness?
Foodiness is turning us into those chubby, slushy, slurping, lounge chair-bound morons in WALL-E, plugged in, pumped full of sugar, and brain dead.
Chef Erica Wides is here to fight against foodiness.
You have to keep drinking the Let's Get Real Kool-Aid for it to start to work.
Let's Get Real. Rediscover real food every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome back to Fumen About It on Heritage Radio Network.org. We air live every Monday night at 7 p.m. out of the back of Roberta's in Bushwick. If you haven't been to Roberta's, it is freaking awesome, and I recommend getting a reservation and checking it out.
Yep. So, back to off flavor. So, we're back to our Coors Light and infected or simulated off flavor.
That's
flavors.
Why I came, was for the Coors.
I know, for the Coors VR. How can
came
you resist?
Came for the Coors, stayed for the acidity.
So this is Coors Light that we've just added actually acetic acid vinegar to. And I use 24 drops. I determined that 24 drops per 1 12-ounce can or bottle of Coors Light is what it takes to get an aroma and flavor. Now this is actually one, so I've taught this off flavors class using this homemade kit to classes and groups. And this is one that I actually, the one that most people ask me for more vinegar because they can't detect it at a lower level, at this level, right? And John's being like, yeah, what's up with this?
I find if I give it a swirl, I'm getting it more on the nose. Oh, now, yeah. At first, I got barely anything.
And I got to tell you, I have a bit of a cold, so my nose is not the best right now.
Yeah, I am. I think you can go up from 24 too. I'm actually on that side. Just to make it explicitly shout out at you. Because I think when you when you're doing these kits, it's important to really get that one single flavor really directly so that you can find it when it's masked. Because you're never gonna get a beer that's just this, most likely. Well, not never, but odds are you're gonna get it, you know, with all sorts of flaws. You know, the diacetyl, with the DMS, with the acidity, or you know, things that just, and the phenols, and it's harder than that, generally.
Yeah. And when you're teaching yourself off flavors, you do want them to be prevalent because you want to have kind of that engraved in your memory exactly what that off flavor smells and tastes like. So I actually get this, I get this much more in the flavor, though. It does have that kind of vinegar tartness and acidity.
Where does it come from?
So this is most commonly, in particular, the vinegar-type sourness is most commonly caused by an infection. Oftentimes, Acetobacter, which is a bacteria that really loves oxygen and can be introduced through a number of ways. It's also an accepted flavor in certain styles, like lambics, to a certain degree. You wouldn't want it overwhelming. But obviously, in certain other styles, it's not acceptable at all. It would interfere. Like, for instance, an IPA. I would have a hard time with an acetic IPA, I believe. So in that, you know, sanitation is key to really keeping Acetobacter out of your beer.
And, you know, these bacteria, they fall downward. They don't fall upward. So when you're cooling your wort, you know, keep your lid. You can, this is where you can put your lid back on. When you're cooling your wort or you don't want to have anything, this bacteria is around us everywhere. Yep. Be scared. Very scared.
No.
And
nonsense. Just be,
she's way more laissez-faire than I am. Be scared. Be scared. It's everywhere, man. If you don't have that control to keep it away. And, you know, there are happy accidents, of course. You know.
Right. So.
Such as.
Yeah, let's talk about vinegar. So John Nagley is not only an excellent home brewer, but he makes very good wine, and he also makes vinegar. Excellent vinegar.
From very good wine.
From very good wine. So let's talk about what is vinegar, and how do you get there?
Okay, vinegar starts out as a fermented beverage, beer, wine, mead.
Cider, you said earlier? Cider. Yeah, okay.
And then you use something called mother of vinegar to convert the alcohol to an acid.
Ah.
It just sits there, takes 3 months to 6 months to convert the alcohol to an acid, and that's it.
And the mother of vinegar, is that, does that have aceto? Do you know what's in there?
It is a bacteria that is a, I'm going to call it a glob.
Right.
It is... and you can find
it's like a gelatinous mass.
Yeah, gelatinous mass. Thank you. It's a kinda better
like a
way to say it. It's a better way to say it. Yes, and it's available in every single homebrew shop you're going to find. Every one of them has it. It's a 8 ounce jar. You use that to begin the process.
Okay, or get it because you mentioned earlier that you had some mother that you
because it keeps propagating
itself.
Absolutely.
Are there different strains of mothers? Or
that's a good question.
No, there aren't. It is when you get the bottle of it from the homebrew shop, it is already in the medium that you're going to be using. So you want to buy if you're going to be doing a cider, you want to buy one that's sitting in a cider starter. And you know, those things, it seems like that's the critical thing. It is the same, the mother's the same, but the starter water, starter liquid that it is sitting in when you purchase the jar, that you need to make sure you're getting the right one.
Right, so it's probably adapted to a certain type of environment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Now, you make... What inspired you to start making vinegar?
Too much wine.
Too much wine.
I was making homemade wine with several friends, and they wanted to make more and more and more and more and more and more, and I was like, I've got too much now, and I just thought that would be a fun extra thing to do with the vinegar.
Yeah.
And I give it out to friends daily.
Thank you.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, we all have been recipients of that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Now you make, I know like we have one of your fig vinegars at home. Mm-hmm. So how do you introduce other, how did that start?
Okay, seeing in a store, tasting it in other environments. I just, you know, you make the vinegar, wait till it is finished.
Okay.
3 to 6 months, and then you just flavor it however you like. Fig is one of the flavors I really enjoy. So,
and do you use fig juice or
real figs?
Real figs. Oh,
diced
okay.
Up. Awesome. I get dried figs diced up, so they expose the meat and the sugars, and that converts that
and
flavors.
How do you know when vinegar is done? Do you just taste it or pH meter? Or just
open the jar. That's all you need to do.
Very scientific method.
Yeah. Well, I like that.
And it's foolproof. That's,
yeah.
That's part.
Does it keep on going, getting more sour and sour and sour?
Nope.
No.
Nope. So it's the level of sourness depends on the alcohol level to begin with. Mm-hmm. And you want, when you're doing it with wine, as an example, you want to dilute the wine so that it's about a 6% alcohol. So if you're using a regular bottle of wine, you usually would use as much water as wine, so it's now from 12% alcohol regular wine down to a 6% alcohol that you're going to use to convert. When you convert, it converts literally, you know, one for one. So if you're doing a beer, a 5 or 6% beer would be fine. You know, you wouldn't want to convert a barley wine to a vinegar. You'd need to dilute it.
Okay.
You were talking about how you had a beer and a cider going, and you know, you.
Well, all right.
Different things happened. What was going on?
I made cider many years ago, badly, and it didn't. It wasn't a drinkable beverage. Group of friends in the New York City Homebrewers Guild decided they were going to try ciders this year. Went and did a mass purchase of cider. I joined them. I was going to do three batches, two that I was going to do for consumption, one that I was going to do for cider vinegar. I tasted all three and was like reluctant to do one of those, convert those to a vinegar, because I was like, this tastes really good. And so I was making a beer at the same time that wasn't going so well. And I said, I'll do the malt vinegar and not the cider vinegar. And yeah, that is still fermenting. It's about a month right now.
Now, what do you ferment these in? What kind of containers?
You're supposed to use glass. Most times I do. Sometimes I don't. The big, I'm going to say 2-gallon plastic jars that you get, you know, the bulk pretzels in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those things. Like big, wide mouth cap.
Yeah, like the clear ones.
Right.
Yeah. Cool.
How does a vinegar go wrong? Like, have you ever had unsuccessful vinegar making things, and how do you prevent that?
Okay, bad starter. Good wine makes good wine vinegar. Bad wine makes bad wine vinegar. And you can see it. You can see that it is going wrong. The typical look for a mother of vinegar, it sits on the top. It floats. The mother floats on the top of the solution. And it's a silky look to it. If it looks like worn leather, if it doesn't look nice and silky, it is not working out right. And that's, throw it away.
That simple.
Yeah, really. And I've done that.
Yeah.
It's we were just talking about the malt vinegar. I'm having a feeling that's what's going to happen.
Is it not looking silky?
Nope. Not looking. It's looking, everyone knows this look of leather that is beyond its time, that rough look. It's looking like that.
Now, I know a lot of people who really like a lot of really kind of sour, vinegary beers. Can you ever go backwards? Like, you know, think you want to... It sounds horrible to me, too.
I've heard people who've done that. I mean, they'll add, as an example, a tablespoon to a 5-gallon batch. That's enough of a starter to get it to go sour.
Yeah. I think the only thing is, then you'd have a hard time controlling that. Because from my experience, at least, because I've made some sour beers, is that... Once you get that acetobacter, it does not stop very easily. So I think blending is good, but then again, you know, I think you still have to consume that beer in a decent amount of time in order for it not to go back to, you know, turn the entire thing into vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
So
now, what about? We were talking about off flavors, and you were saying that you want to start with good wine or good beer.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you've got a batch of homebrew you've had for a while; it's starting, oxidation is setting in. You know, otherwise, it's decent. Is that going to affect the flavor of the vinegar if you decide to make a malt vinegar out of older oxidized beer?
Probably not. I mean, I've done it with the wines that have just slightly oxidized. You can see that they're, you know, just beyond their prime, and that works. So I would say the same thing with oxidized beer. That's the only flaw.
Right. Then okay. Assuming that's the only flaw.
Yeah. Then okay. But otherwise,
What other flaws do you think would get in the way? I mean, all the other flaws? Are there any other acceptable flaws that you know,
has been my experience that if you start with a good product, you end up with a good product.
Right.
If you don't, it ends up bad. It ends up, you know, garbage. And it's, you know.
Right.
Don't do that. real simple.
How many batches of vinegar would you say you've probably made at this point?
No, I mean, here's what I do. Is it, with the wine making, I had so much. I had 400 or 500 bottles of homemade wine in my house at one point. And I just would make it. And if I'd create a new batch, take the mother off the old batch, put it onto the new batch. And I had gallons fermenting at a time way back. And I don't know. I mean, I do 2 or 3 batches a year. 2 gallons at a time.
Okay.
So I don't know what that is.
A lot.
It's a lot. Vinegar goes a long way.
I've got a lot of friends who ask me for it all the time.
You make a delicious lot of salad dressing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's for sure. And marinade and all kinds of stuff. So that's something, Chris, that we need to do is start with some vinegar because I have never done it.
We have lots of fermenting to do before your talk at the NHC. I know that. And I'm excited about that.
And we also just were gifted some water kefir and milk kefir grains, buds. So we're going to start that.
Thanks to Jessica and John from IBU.
Yep.
An import company
that's
for
Iberian,
Spanish. Iberian Beer United.
Yep. A new import company in New York City that's bringing in some delightful Spanish beer. So, yeah, she gifted us some water kefir and milk kefir buds. So we're going to get those going. Otherwise, we want to remind you that Heritage Radio Network is a not-for-profit organization. You can support them and consequently us by becoming a member. It starts at $60 and goes up. And you, as a home brewer or a home fermenter, will get 5% off all of your purchases at both Bitter and Esther's and Brooklyn Homebrew, as well as $1 off beers at Jimmy's Number 43.
That's right.
Besides just supporting a great organization.
That have people like Jack Inslee, our producer, and Joe Galarraga, our engineer. What's up, Joe? And want to give a giant thanks to BR Rolia and John Nagley. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
See you next week on Ferment About It.
Yeah, good night.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Running through your brain, driving you